In addition to all this action and all these important issues, you've been very generous with sensual pleasures in the world of Three Pines. There's the centrality of art, for example, Clara's wonderful paintings and the way you vividly create them. You've said that Clara is really your alter ego. And there's this appreciation of fine music and good food. And of course, there's a writer in town. And so you're painting in this landscape in words in so many ways. But I've often wondered about one thing, if you'll indulge me with this. And it's, what is it like for you to write Ruth's poetry?
Oh, it is not at all difficult because, in fact, I don't. Actually, at the beginning, we do it with, obviously, I do it with permission, but half of the poetry is, perhaps slightly less, but a great deal of it is Margaret Atwood's.
Aha!
Yes, it's from a cheery little volume called Morning in the Burned House.
Oh, that has a wonderful poem about being a witch.
Yes, oh, you know that.
Yes.
Half-Hanged Mary, it's called.
Uh-huh.
Oh, my goodness. It's searing. It's powerful. It's a marvelous, wonderful little volume. I mean, obviously Margaret is best known for other things, but her poetry is very powerful. And of course, as I said, it's used with permission because you really do not want to annoy Margaret Atwood. I think it may even be against the law in Canada.
Very possibly.
And the other is it's actually a kind of a sad story. This is a wonderful poet who died, and in her papers they found the poetry, and her friends put out a limited edition volume of it. Marianne Plessner was her name, and someone gave me, this was about 20 years ago, before I started writing, and I read them and was so taken with them. So some of Ruth's actually most famous poems are Marianne's.
Now, readers often feel extraordinarily close to writers whose books they love, and you are no exception, and you've been extremely open with your readers, with your website and your Facebook page and your arduous book tours, and that seems so sincere on your part, and now more than ever, it seems.
About my life, you mean, my personal
mm-hmm.
life? Yeah. What is? Thank you for that. It's important to me. I think to talk about it only because my husband wanted it that way. But he was diagnosed 4 years ago with dementia, and it was kind of galloping dementia, as it turns out. And he was a very measured man, so it always struck me as somewhat odd that he would have galloping dementia, but he did. And he was a doctor, and he and I had, after the diagnosis, had. While he could still articulate these things, he felt very strongly that he did not want to hide in the shadows. He wanted it very clear that this is nothing he's ashamed of, that there's no reason to be ashamed of it, and that he was leaning into it, and he was going to make the best of what he had. And I promised him he would never be left behind, and that I would carry on the work. And so he was very open about his dementia, and of course, as it declined, to be honest, I talked about probably 50%, and the other 50%, it's trying to find such an interesting thing, Susan. You must find this with talking to other authors, that trying to find the difference between what's personal and what's private. And what's personal, I feel I have permission to talk about, but there's some things that really are private, and so some things were kept private, but I knew Michael wanted to talk about and have it out there, that about the journey of dementia, and he died last September the 18th, at home. I was able to keep him at home. But I was blessed, so blessed. I had, not only was I a beautiful husband who simply became more gentle as the dementia took him, and that is not every case, and it's not a choice. Not because he was gentle in life. We just got lucky about that. I worked from home. I didn't have to go outside of the house to work. And we had all the care and, frankly, the financial resources. And I try to do a lot of fundraisers for dementia and care and support, home support, because I don't know how people do it. I barely was able to do it, and I had every advantage.
I know, it's the hardest work there is. And you've often said that when you were making up Armand Gamache. You were conjuring your ideal man, and then you looked across the table, and there he was, and you were already married to him.
Damn him. I thought, aren't I clever?
Yes.
No, I have no imagination at all. I write essentially the community I live in and the food I eat. And now I've written, the main character is actually my husband. Yes, he had all the qualities. Michael and Armand share so many qualities of integrity, of humor, of taking their work very, very seriously. But not necessarily themselves all that seriously, of having a great capacity for friendship and for love and gratitude that we all, I don't think you get gray in your hair without reaching that fork in the road where so much has happened and life has battered you so much that you either become embittered or you become compassionate. Mm-hmm. And Michael became compassionate, and he guided me toward that when life I felt was unfair, and he made it clear that, you know, it's not unfair. You have been born with every advantage, and so don't think that you should lead a magical life when people lead worse lives.
So
they share that with Gamache.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's so interesting that, you know, for readers, books are such consolation, you know, and people feel that way about Three Pines, that it is an escape and a comfort, and even though it is a murder scene most often, but still, and it seems that for you, the writing, the creation of this place has offered you that consolation in this time.
It is ironic, isn't it, that I wrote it hoping that others might find a haven, and then 12 years, 10 years later, I find the same haven in writing the books. People find it in reading, and I find it in writing. And I needed that. And it genuinely became a harbor as Michael's disease progressed. And I was able every morning to go, as I wrote Glass Houses, I would look after him first thing and get up early and then go into the living room with the dog and my cup of coffee and write. And I was able to go into Three Pines with my community of friends and a lovely village I would choose to live in, and Armand, who is immortal now, and a world that I could control, and a world where goodness exists. And that's a line that I'm not sure I've ever actually used in the books, but that it's a poem from Auden in his Elegy to Melville that permeates the series and, in fact, informs the entire series, that goodness exists. His terror had to blow itself quite out to let him see it. Mm-hmm. It's about terror, but at the end of the day, it's about goodness, and I know that goodness exists.
Well,
I know that terror exists.
That seems your core belief. I mean,
it is. It was hard. It was hard come by.
Oh, of course.
It was. As often it is.
And that's one of the other things about these books. There is such a spiritual dimension. You always sprinkle in bits of wisdom literature. You know, Armand says Matthew 10:36, you know, or Pema Chodron or Mahatma Gandhi. You turn to wisdom literature in so many ways, which gives your readers these little nuggets to contemplate.
It's helped me through life. I consider myself more spiritual than religious. I read the Bible, as you said. I've read Meditations. I've been so humbled by them and guided by it. And so it's a real joy for me to be able to use it. I have absolutely no agenda. I don't expect anyone else to believe what I believe. And in fact, in the books, I sometimes get letters from people saying, you know, why are you dumping on Catholicism? Why are you dumping on the Jewish faith? Why are you dumping on... And it always surprises me because I'm not. There are some characters in the books who don't agree with some of the things that are happening, and not everybody believes the same thing, and I think it's important to voice that as well and let people come to their own beliefs. But there's a richness out there, and yet it all seems to come from the same taproot, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's miraculous, because I bet they don't quit going to Three Pines. I mean, because, you know, every visit there is the same in some ways, but every visit is wildly different, too.
What a lovely thing to say.
So,
with stability. It's nice to have stability, isn't it? But while at the same time, there's progress. There's a phrase about being a rowboat society where you're looking back but moving forward.
Well, let's hope we keep moving forward.
Mm-hmm.